Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
I'm here today with Jane Pappin, Director and Founder of Pop-Up Health, an amazing community organisation providing services for those transitioning from hospital and when they're at home in the community. But that's not the most interesting part about this lady I'm about to speak to. The most interesting part is that she grew up in a lighthouse and was taught by the School of Air. Her organisation is a very South Australian successful organisation, started in 2012 on her kitchen table when she had one client that she was providing services to, and the business has now been built to 368 staff. It's a fascinating story. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Kerry.
So, Jane, I'd like to start with the lighthouse. What was it like living in a lighthouse?
It was the most amazing experience. My father decided that he was in the corporate world and he just wanted to escape the world for a few years. So we went to Troubridge Island, which was a working manned lighthouse at the time. And it's just a big sandbar off Edithburgh down on York Peninsula. And I have two younger sisters and I was 8 when we went out there. We went out to the island on a boat, which was scary. We all got out there and we lived there for 3 years. It was the most amazing experience as a child. It's my most favourite childhood memories of having a cubby built out of a rainwater tank, and my parents both played the piano and we had to wait for a year for a ship to go past and bring our piano in on a army dock. And the piano arrived and finally we were able to sing around the piano and things like that. And we used to have food delivered out on the boat every Friday if the weather was fine. And so we would all get a comic and we would get a supply of lollies, and then we would listen to the football on the radio on Saturday afternoons and read our comics and listen to our listen to the footy.
But that was weekly?
Yes.
Now, how's that for attention span compared to, I think it's about 17 seconds these days that people have an attention span for, to wait for things?
Exactly.
In my day, I grew up in the country in Wollonga, and we had Mr. Vinny's, and he'd come in his green van, and they'd have all the haberdashery, and you'd buy books and all these different things, a bit of staples like flour and sugar, and they were the days. Now, of course, Jane, growing up in the country like that, you did the School of Air.
We did. So every Monday to Friday, we would have 15 minutes each where we were part of a class of another 4 or 5 students. And the other 4 that I was with in the first year were all farming students, farming children. And so, yeah, we had 15 minutes where we would focus on one subject every day. And that was it. We were always excited to do our School of the Air times. And I would get up in the morning at 6 with my dad to do a subject of learning, and then we would have breakfast at 8, and then my sisters would be up and we'd all be doing learning with mum and dad teaching us then. Yeah, and we used to finish school at 2:30 every day and go fishing off the beach and catch our double-header whiting, which I don't think you can do quite as easily these
days.
That
is pretty cool, isn't it, to be able to have that freshly done, put on the barbecue.
Was beautiful, yeah. Even our cat, we had a cat out there that we took out there, and he had the best diet of whiting.
Real whiting,
yeah,
not the fake kind that comes in the can.
There was no cat food for him.
Oh, great stories. So, Jane, you went on into the health profession. Tell us how your career progressed.
So I finished school back in Adelaide and then just fell into nursing and did hospital training, and then went on and did my degree down at Flinders University, a Bachelor of Nursing. And I was working in Perth and Adelaide, and I was back in Adelaide and just working in a major public hospital, just thought that the experience that the patients were getting upon discharge just wasn't really up to speed, and that I thought that altruistically I thought that I could do better. And so I resigned from my full-time job and I went and stayed at home, worked on the kitchen table, as you mentioned, and I worked there for about 3 or 4 years, just going and seeing a couple of patients, writing up policies and procedures and having a good business foundation. And then, then just went bang and took on a lot more patients. And I hired one nurse and that 1 week, and then each week for about a year.
And grew from there.
Yeah, we just kept
going. And was
it
word of mouth, the organisation grew?
Yes. And also from the staff that we hired would just start talking to others, and and then we just, our patient base grew, and now we see about 300 people every day in their own homes to help them remain independent or provide wound care or things like that.
And, of course, you have a good business partner.
Yes, I do. That's my husband. About 6 years ago, I dragged him out of the construction industry. and said, I need some help. And he came across and was a volunteer with us for 6 months, so we didn't pay him. We couldn't afford to pay him. And
Who was the help? Why would you pay?
Exactly. So he volunteered and did all of our back-end stuff and learnt very quickly, going from working with all males to all females, that it was completely different. Yeah, it was great. And he's still with us. He's our CFO now within the business.
And a great artist. I've been to Pop-Up Health. It's on Green Hill Road. Went to their offices, and great art up on the walls. Jane, let's explore those gaps that you saw, because initially it was the transition from hospital to home in the community. What was the gaps that you were seeing wasn't being done?
I could see that the patients were being discharged but didn't have a lot of information about what services were available within the community. So for an older person going home, they didn't have any phone numbers to contact. They didn't have the resources coming into their house to help them to stay at home and be independent. So, and that was really important to me. And also the information about navigating the aged care system or the NDIS system or that process. So, and that's where I've put a big focus, having the staff with all of that knowledge so that they can actually help independent people to stay at home.
And of course, that's only become more complex, Jane, hasn't it? And the other thing with it is that if you're baby boomer age, or you're that sandwich generation where you have children or maybe not yet grandchildren and you have older parents, you just want to sit down and have a cup of tea and a chat. You don't want to be on the phone, waiting on the line, if you can even find a phone number, waiting to hear back from somebody. It's an exhausting process.
It is. And when you are, and I am myself in that situation at the moment with my parents, and I actually just want to be the daughter and have that cup of tea. But for me, I'm actually doing all the groundwork, but it gives you a different role and you don't have that time to be the daughter that you are. So, yeah, that's really important to me, that we have someone within our organisation, Kim, who is our navigator. She does aged care navigation and she is
And she's lovely, can I say. I've met Kim, delightful. Just makes you feel good from the moment you start speaking to her.
She is. She's a beautiful person and she has got the knowledge that we need to help others to navigate the process and to try and do it the easy way.
And so for a very small fee, your organisation can help do that, because it can be very costly, but yours is minimal compared to what's out there.
It is, yes. And we can offer you all the different options. It's still your choice, but we can offer you all the options that are out there and just help you to navigate how to get into the My Aged Care process and go on from there.
Now, you mentioned about NDIS. Is that a space you're involved in a lot?
Yes, we have around 100 participants that we provide care to. We do a lot of nursing care, personal care, and that helps, once again, helps the participants to stay at home. And we've been through all of the audits. So we've had an Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission audit recently that we successfully passed, same with an NDIS audit. So there's a lot of background regulation that we have been through to make sure that we're providing the safest and best care possible for all of these people.
And we do know there has been some issues around people being cared for in the home. So it's great you've mentioned that you've been through all of those accreditations. It is a concern for people, and you wouldn't have grown to the number of staff and be having the referrals if people weren't in very safe hands. I'm talking to Jane Pappin, Director and Founder of Pop-Up Health, a community-based organisation. Jane, let's just explore out this whole situation of when people are nearing that older end of life, we'll say. I'll just pause there because we have to be very careful how we term things these days. But it is, even before you actually plan to retire or before you have health issues, it's good to have that knowledge, isn't it? Because people aren't even sure, how do I access Centrelink? What do I do if I do want to retire? How would I manage now my health starting to give? Could I actually manage on my own? Or something happens to them, to their partner, so they might not personally need help, but they're struggling as a carer.
Absolutely. And so we encourage everyone over the age of 65 to enrol with My Aged Care on the portal.
So I don't think everybody would even know that's what you should do. So this is a really good conversation.
Yeah, and it's great because it's an easy website to navigate. And we can help you with that, but you can just register on there so that you're at least, you've got it's called an AC number, aged care number, and you can utilise that further down the track if you need to. If you feel that you need some additional additional services, then that is the first step, is going onto the portal, registering, and there's a few questions there. You just work your way through it, and then someone will contact you from the Commonwealth, and they'll follow it up and potentially may even do an assessment with a view to a home care package or some additional services.
And what would trigger an assessment, Jane?
If someone needed some help with showering or personal care, needed some assistance to go shopping, or some gardening and home maintenance and things like that. So medication management is a big one as well.
So you don't have to be sick as such. And no. That's what a lot of people, I think. But I'm not an old person. I mean, I struggle with these things, but I don't have a health issue as they see it. They're on medications, but they don't see it's something they should register on my aged care.
Exactly. Mm. And so you don't actually need to be old. Age is how you feel, I think. So, yeah, I think the earlier you can do that after 65, and get on the register, it's a real benefit. And then when something does happen, you're all ready to go, and they've actually already got some information there for you, and so you can just move forward with that.
Because you don't want it in a crisis situation, do you? Because I know for some people where the big thing, and their parents had a fall, and when someone has a fall, then it's really difficult. They go to hospital and they come, what are we going to do?
Exactly. There's four different levels of home care packages at this point in time with the Commonwealth, and so those home care packages can mean that you can have anywhere from $9,000 or $10,000 of care through to $53,000 worth of care over a 12-month period. And that can help amazingly, even if it's just assisting with transport to a medical appointment, or sometimes we are the only people that these individuals see in a day.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And so I think even for that benefit, social prescribing, which is what it's called when there's loneliness or they don't have any relatives or friends or family, and that can happen to anyone really. That is a huge aspect of what we do, is going in and often just sitting with them and having a cup of tea or taking them shopping, going to the medical appointment or just things like that. And it might be the tiniest little thing of hanging the washing out.
So it's not just the medical. You provide that whole gamut of care.
Yeah, we go for everything to maintain their independence at home, and that's really important.
And even if they have a carer, you were saying that you provide the health side, but you actually can support the carer, because that's difficult too, isn't it?
Absolutely. So often they're in a couple situation, and there is always a carer within a couple, and we provide support to the carer as well, because that's important. They can get carer's stress, and that needs to be addressed. And so we can provide them also with some respite, so that if they want to go out and meet a friend for coffee, the carer, then we can stay at home with their partner and make sure that they're feeling safe and comfortable.
And can the carer access some of these packages even though they're there caring for them?
If they're over 65, then they may also be eligible for a home care package. So that would work for them. The care is provided to the individuals in the couple. So you can have a couple that each have a home care package. Yeah, that works. But you can also have just an individual.
Now, I would imagine the government would ideally like everyone to stay at home until end of life and not be going to hospitals and to nursing homes if they don't have to. But it's difficult, isn't it, to stay in the home? It's also the physical infrastructure as well. When your team goes in, are they in a position that they can say, well, perhaps some handrails might help you? Or
absolutely. So when we go in and do the initial assessment, we'll often engage one of our occupational therapists who will come in and also do an assessment. So they'll look at, yes, the handrails, or it might be just even some simple things like a ramp at the back door or moving
arthritis handles.
That's right.
Like that.
And a pickup stick. Such a simple little thing, but you can pick up your socks from the floor. And
I think I need one of those.
We often do a lot of risk management. So it's a falls prevention strategy of moving a mat out of the way that may be a trip hazard and things like that. So there's so many tools out there these days that you can utilise within the home that just minimises the risk of falls or a tripping hazard. Or
they're the big ones. As soon as, mum had a fall,
absolutely,
and then all goes downhill after that.
And all of it is hospital avoidance. So it's keeping them out of hospital and making sure that they have good quality of life. And it's all about their choice. So the older person, or anyone really who's having care in their own home, needs to have their choice of lifestyle and the services that they want. So a lot of our staff develop incredible relationships with our clients and our patients, and that's always so rewarding to see. And my parents were actually some of our clients when they were both living in the same little unit, and they honestly knew more about our staff than I did and then our HR team, because they would just have that time to sit and have a chat with them and things like that. And my dad actually had an old atlas. He's still in his house, and it's marked with when they would arrive, when someone new would arrive, he would have a little post-it note and he would put it where and their name on the atlas as to where they had come from. And things like that. And so he would then, every weekend, he would show me, oh, we had so-and-so come and visit and they come from here, or things like that.
So you generally try and keep the same staff member going out?
Yes. We usually have a team of between five and eight.
So same sort of going out there. And that's really important, because I do know in the aged care environment, when you're actually in a designated home, they're having to change a lot of staff regularly now. So on that, you're saying your parents might have known more about the staff, but you obviously know a lot about staff retention, because to build to 368, no mean feat, Jane. How did you do that?
We've worked really hard on our workplace culture and just valuing the small things that people do, and knowing something about each individual staff member that we have is really important to me. So I will quite often at the shift changes go down and catch up with people, and I somehow seem to know what their dog's name is, or just something small about them if they've had a baby recently and things like that. We have just done a refit of a building on Greenhill Road in 2022, and we put in a cafe there for the benefit of staff, so that the barista is in there from 6 a.m. to catch the early staff, and they have discounted coffees, and it goes through and it works incredibly well to boost morale. And just, we have teams of nurses that now come in early in the morning, 5 to 6, to sit there and have their coffee together and have a bit of a chat before they start their day. So just little things like that, I think. And we do celebrate our success incredibly well. So it's important to me that when we have a success, and it might be something really small, we will celebrate that as a team.
So how do you celebrate it? What have you done?
Recently, when we got notification of our passing of our successful aged care quality and safety audit, we had morning tea on Monday, just lovely, gone. And presented someone with some flowers, and we just sort of all came together in our staff room. Yeah, that was really good. Sometimes there is a wound day that is usually around May or June, and we have little cupcakes made, and we actually get photos of real wounds from our patients.
Yummy.
And we get them made into little icing circles and put them on top of the cupcakes. And
sounds more like a Halloween event
to
me.
Some of them are not good. And so those pictures are out and about and on the cupcakes, and we just celebrate with that and things like that. So we've got Pancake Tuesday, Trove Tuesday, all the boys in our office cooking for the day, pancakes to share together.
That's absolutely brilliant. I love it. Jane, looking futuristically, do you think that more and more mental health will become a big part of that community, keeping people at home? You talked about social prescribing. We all know the issues around loneliness, but your team is in actively every day helping with that. Is that an area that you think will grow?
Absolutely. I think mental health is such a huge issue that we've got to address within the community, and to keep these people out of hospital where it just doesn't address their issues. And if we can do it in their own environment, that's going to be a lot better as well. We also have a program that works in police stations. So we have nurses in police stations, and they're dealing with a lot of mental health in there, and just giving them counselling and advice and working with the detainees in there. And that's a significant role that a nurse can play.
So that's something the police force have organised with you directly?
We ran a pilot for it in 2018 with some nurses in a police station in Adelaide, and then it's grown from there, and we now have nurses in 4 police stations 24/7. So
I'm not surprised at that need or level at all, particularly in certain areas.
Absolutely. And it's the nurses that are there are truly incredible. The level of tolerance, but also the information that they can give and the advice they can give to support both the detainees and the officers, is just amazing to watch. Yeah, and they all enjoy their job, which is, that's probably the bit for me that I find rewarding, is the job satisfaction that they get out of being able to treat someone and help someone, to guide them through a really testing time in their life, whether it be at home or in the police cells. It's a huge thing to watch.
And Jane, you mentioned about keeping out of hospital as well as keeping out of, we talked about residential care, because to date I've never known an older person to say, well, I'm waiting to go to the aged care home. You've not said anything yet. Where are the papers? It's usually massive resistance naturally. Mm-hmm. So even that process alone, because that's a big part of the trauma, isn't it? Now, eventually, if through medical need, that happened. But people are very afraid of that. So this is almost like, you know, when you boil the frog up in the nicest way, but it is a better transition process.
Absolutely. And I think the care that you can get at home through a home care package or a Commonwealth home support sort of gives you an insight into your care needs while you're at home. And once you exceed those care needs, or your carer is unable to manage you in your own home environment, then I think we can do it gently. Instead of having that process of, well, it's quite an obstructive process in a sense, but I think this way we can sort of gently do it and work with the family to make sure that that we have the right outcome for the individual who may have to enter a nursing home or an aged care facility.
So a lot of family members are probably not aware of what's available. They just think the only answer is to go straight to a residential care facility.
Exactly. And so that's where we have a navigation arm to our business, where we can give you that guidance on what is available. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there in the community about what is available to keep people in their own homes. And that's a really important aspect of what we do.
And potentially also what threshold you need to be. I'm sure they're all thinking you need to be at the extreme threshold of need rather than just the beginning of the need.
Absolutely. But I think if you can get onto the My Aged Care website at the start, then that sort of gives you some guidance as to what is available, and we can help with that as well.
I'm talking to Jane Pappin, Director and Founder of Pop-Up Health. So Jane, how does the community access what you do now? Community centres, which many listen to this podcast, of course. You've had a lot of great interaction already, but there's a lot of opportunities there.
We have a website, popuphealth.com.au, where there is a lot of information, and there's a contact page there where you can send us some information and we will be in contact with you. We also run these navigation groups and visits. We also have a phone number, amazingly, 1300 858 047, where we have an aged care team, we have an NDIS team, and a community nursing team. They're all experts in their field. The majority of them are nurses, but we're supported by a really strong administration team as well. So yeah, we also do home maintenance, cleaning and gardening as well, and that comes into the realm of veterans home care and also into home care packages.
Now, if I can ask just a question about that, because one of the other concerns is, if I'm organising home maintenance and cleaning and things, gardening, but unlike you, which I'm sure you do very thorough checks on your contractors, or if you are employing people to do this, because that's a real concern. You're sending somebody into that home. What are they looking at? What information they're getting? Is your parent or family member safe?
Yes, exactly. And so for us, we've gone through accreditation. We had the aged care quality and safety audit, and they go through everything like that. We do not have contractors, so everyone who works for us is an employee, and that works really well for us. So they will come in our uniform with an ID badge, and it will usually be a regular person that comes. So that works really well for us.
That's amazing. Try and find a cleaner. Try and find a gardener. No one worries about if they're safe in your home, because you're surprised they turned up.
Yes.
So if they're safe and they're good, that's terrific.
Yeah, we have an amazing scheduling team who organise all of this.
I met the scheduling team, and I suggested perhaps they might be able to help some other areas that need some scheduling. No, they were incredible what they do, because as you said, they come in and they get their packs with everything in it for the day. If someone isn't available or someone can't take them. Logistically, how many clients a day did you say?
Oh, we're seeing 300 a day.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is a challenge, but they do an amazing job. So yeah, no, it's good. And everyone enjoys what they're doing.
And not only that, they also give with their heart. You do some volunteering?
We do. So we volunteer down at the Western Food Hub on Sunday evenings, helping to prepare food so that people can have a meal and a hot drink on a cold day, or a cool drink on a hot day. So yeah, that's what we do on our downtime.
Love you to give that phone number again for Pop-Up Health, Jane.
1-300-858-047.
And your website?
popuphealth.com.au.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm sure that's some valuable information, and please give them a call. There's a lot that this organisation can do and more.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening. These podcasts bring you stories from across the state of South Australia. All of the great work being done in our communities and general topics of community interest. Feel free to share these podcasts with your networks and send us any feedback to info@communitycentressa.asn.au.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.